You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 409, take two. Today is Monday, July 9th, 2018, and my name is Steve. No Ham tonight, but I'm joined by Curtis. And folks, before we start, please help out the podcast by subscribing, writing a review, and sharing links on Twitter and Facebook to the show. All right, so Curtis, in tonight's show, we'll discuss the Manny Machado rumors, the Braves All-Star selections, and of course, the 10-game road trip. But first, Kurt, a quick break. So, Kurt, there's good news and bad news about the show, right? The bad news is that last night's show that we thought we were recording but didn't was probably the greatest show we've ever done.
Brilliant.
I mean, no hammy, so immediately elevated.
Right. It takes you up to 120% right there.
Right. And we just had it cooking last night, but yeah. Sorry, everybody.
It's like the Zack Snyder Justice League cut that will remain a mystery.
That's exactly right. But the good news is we've rehearsed, which we never do.
And I actually did a little more research, which I also never do.
So there you go. So there may be benefit to it after all. All right. So, Kurt, let's start with the news that started coming out this past weekend about seven teams having made offers on Manny Machado and that the Braves were one of them. So, like in Ken Rosenthal's story, he suggested that the Dodgers and Brewers are the front runners. John Heyman wrote a few days ago that there's not much separating the offers amongst the teams. And then MLB.com had an article on Sunday stating that in the order of appeal to the Orioles, the offers go Dodgers, D-backs, Brewers, Phillies, Braves, Indians, and Cubs. So Braves fifth out of seven. So I don't get the sense that anyone really, really knows other than the Braves have clearly expressed interest and clearly made an offer. The beat writers have confirmed that as well. So, look, I don't think the Braves are going to come away with Manny Machado. I just don't. I just don't believe that they're going to put up what's needed given how much Anthopoulos has spoken about prospect capital and all that stuff. But their interest, I do think, is notable. So first off, I want to start with Machado has been clear that he wants to play shortstop, right? So assume the Braves are going after him and that they'd put him at shortstop for the remainder of the year. So, Kurt, let's start with what do you make of, sort of the Dansby piece of that whole equation? What are the Braves doing?
Yeah, that seems sort of an obvious first point to make. And it seems as if the Braves, unless they're potentially throwing him in on a trade deal, which, he's still a young player, still has flashes of talent, certainly is a really nice. Yeah, right. Maybe the Orioles would be interested in that, but it sort of gets you the feel that the Braves are perhaps giving up on Dansby a little if they're willing to make a move for a shortstop to better the team and it not be the third baseman, of course, that we've thought would be the piece offensively that we've talked about. I mean, everybody we've talked about, Josh Donaldson and Moustakas and all these other players are third basemen. So, and that you would move Camargo to the bench. But that is an interesting aspect of this whole thing that they're targeting him as a shortstop.
I mean, I suppose that, well, look, there's no arguing that Machado makes the team better. Machado and Camargo's offense is much better than Dansby's and Camargo's offense, no doubt. And whoever ends up on the bench, assuming Dansby isn't traded, then the bench gets better, and the bench is pretty weak. If they're including Dansby in the offer, which I don't know that I believe. I mean, how much do the Orioles want a very slick fielding but light hitting shortstop? But if the Braves actually were offering Dansby, then that means the Braves can't believe they're really, really 100% going to, sign Machado in the offseason. So then they are assuming that they would move you know, Camargo to short and sign a free agent third baseman in the offseason or vice versa. But I think, you know, the third base should be easier to fill than short. And Camargo's looked great in the field. Or are you just hedging your bets? Let's improve the offense this year, but assume we're going to keep Dansby, and then we just get him, you know, two or three starts a week. I don't really know how you do that. Keep him sharp enough, and then he's your shortstop again next year. I don't know. It's a bit goofy. You know, the other thing is they are interested, and they just wanted to sort of see what the market was going to be like, because it helps them gauge other things that they are looking at and are trying to get involved in that we have no idea about, and they never really intend to get Machado. I mean, that's a possibility here too.
Yeah, they muddy the waters and maybe prevent someone like the Phillies that they're competing against. I mean, that really, as I'm saying, it doesn't make much sense, but
it may make them drive up the price.
Right. Sure. Know? I mean, does he have I sort of spent the day looking this up. Does he have a no trade clause, like teams that, or like that if a team like the Braves trades for him and then sort of moves him to third? I mean, is that even a possibility that they could do something like that?
For sure. There's no clause where I won't play third.
And I guess you sort of then create a situation where your new player is immediately disgruntled.
Right. Your new player is immediately disgruntled. You came out on record, you know, a month ago saying Camargo's our everyday third baseman, and he's only getting better and better at the plate every day. I mean, Camargo's been quite good for the last month.
Yeah. I guess my broader issue is, what do you have to give up? You know, if they're the whatever it was, fifth, sixth best offer that that Baltimore has, I mean, we'll never know. But I'm curious as to what pieces they've offered to Baltimore to get Manny Machado. You know, I mean, what future are you mortgaging? You also, Anthopoulos also talked about the money issue, that they were sort of tight. And I mean, you're basically taking on, in effect, $8 million remaining on Machado's contract for the rest of the year as well. And if you give up these pieces, my feeling is he's not re-signing with the Braves. I just don't think the Braves are in a position where, one, because of Liberty Media, but two, that they're going to outbid a potential free agent who the Dodgers want, the Cubs want, you know, the Phillies want, all these teams that have tons of money.
Absolutely.
So basically you'd be giving up, say, three or four pieces, one of which has to be a top five, top eight prospect, I would imagine.
I imagine there's one prospect from the top 10 that would go. I mean, you know, the good news, in quotes, is that when he finally gets traded and we see what the package is, we'll be able to have a decent idea about probably what the Braves were offering.
Right. Exactly.
Which would be interesting.
But I if this if the Braves end up with Manny Machado, I will be stunned, to say the least.
I'll be stunned and also super excited that Manny Machado's
on
the
team.
Don't get me wrong.
It would be
right?
Awesome.
And, you know, it would be great. I mean, I guess we're coming from it as the, you know, there's only a finite number of prospects that they're going to give up this year, specifically when Anthopoulos has talked about he wants to really see what we have and understand the system and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that prospect capital is better spent on a starter, you know, a starting pitcher and the bullpen than on upgrading the offense. It is the least of the three needs.
Yeah, the other thing, can Machado pitch every fifth day, and the days he's not pitching or playing shortstop, can he relieve for a couple of innings?
That because really would be great.
Yeah, that's really the glaring need right now on the team.
Yes, and we will get to that as we get to the 10-game road trip. But let's move on to another piece of sort of off the field news, which was the Braves were unable to sign their first overall pick from this year's draft, number 8 overall right-handed pitcher Carter Stewart. So following the draft, Braves scouting director Brian Bridges was talking about Stewart's like unbelievable breaking ball. And he said, quote, "God willing that he stays healthy, it's the one thing he'll always have." Well, Kurt, as irony would have it,
not so much.
Yeah. So following the physical that he was given after the Braves drafted him, the Braves saw something that concerned them about his wrist. The rumor is ligament issue in his wrist. And so as a result, they ended up offering approximately 40% of the slot value for that pick, about $2 million of the 4.9, which is estimated for that slot. So first off, obviously, this is not great news, right? Stewart looked to be amazing. He was considered the best high school arm in the draft. The Braves also lose that signing slot dollars, which impacts potentially other another signing. But on the good side, because they offered that amount, because they crossed that 40% threshold, they are awarded a protected pick. And it's the pick that comes after the pick that you weren't able to sign. So the Braves get the ninth pick in next year's draft. It is protected. So if they don't sign a free agent this coming offseason that costs them a draft pick because of the qualifying offer, they will have two first rounders next year. So, you know, not all is lost. Anything to add there, Kurt?
Well, this is some of the stuff that I actually looked at some more information today on. So apparently, which is always the worst case on things like this, he hurt his wrist swinging the bat, which you always want your number one pitching draft pick to hurt himself swinging the bat. And so apparently there is some serious disagreement with the Braves and Carter Stewart's family about the level of the injury. They're sort of downplaying it. The Braves obviously got spooked and sort of kept dropping the money to below $2 million, which, as you mentioned, is that 40% threshold, which you figure they just stayed at that level just so they could get the compensatory pick next year. But there's also the issue, which I read, that there is a pitcher out of LSU named Zach Hess, who the Braves drafted very low, but have high expectations for. And basically he said that he was drafted really, really low, but he wanted much more money than what his draft pick would have given him. And so perhaps the Braves were trying to save some money on Carter Stewart and then enable them to sign Zach Hess, because he said if he didn't get to a certain dollar amount, he was going to go back to LSU. Lastly, Carter Stewart's family, basically, if the Braves had even kind of gone, according to this, what I read in Talking Chop, which is a great chronological lineup of all this, that if they'd gotten 80%, that he probably would have signed with the Braves. So, yeah. It's clearly something. And it's also worth noting that Anthopoulos did this before. The 2015, their first round draft pick was Brady Singer. And they didn't sign him because medical issues came up with their physical. But he went back to Florida and pitched great and then got drafted by the Royals and has since gone on to pitch in their farm systems without any lingering injury issues. So just whatever that is worth.
Yeah, so my pushback on that theory, because I've read the theory too, that they were lowballing Carter Stewart to get the guy from LSU. The problem is, if Carter Stewart doesn't sign for that 40% amount, which of course is what happens, then you lose all the money. You don't get anybody.
Right.
Like if you thought enough about this guy to draft him with your first pick, then don't you just make sure you sign him unless you are legitimately worried about the injury thing? It just doesn't make sense to me when I look at it closely.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And this guy from LSU, I mean, he was considered a top 100 draft prospect, but wasn't selected. The round was 34th, so obviously very late. And they think it was because he said it would take a large signing bonus to get him out of LSU. And so he wanted basically what he would have gotten if he had been picked between 60 and 100. The signing bonus in the 34th round would have been 125 grand. In the 60 to 100 range, it's 600 to 1.1 million. So,
right.
Slightly more.
All right. So, Sunday night, last night, was the All-Star Selection Show, and four Braves are going. So we got two starters, right, in Freddie and Nick Markakis. It was great. I don't know if you watched the show, Kurt, but they had Freddie and Markakis on, sitting next to each other, getting interviewed by Carl Ravitch. Markakis not smiling at all. It was just perfect. It was fantastic. And then two reserves. So Albies lost his lead spot to Baez of the Cubs.
Cheaters.
Yes. But he and Folty are reserves, and they're going. And ESPN had Albies on as well, alone, getting interviewed. And Albies, the opposite Markakis, was just smiling the entire time.
Nice.
And having a great time. So obviously great news. Very excited for the All-Star game, and maybe most excited that Albies didn't end up in the final vote thing, because
right.
that is just exhausting, and all the Twitter noise about it. Seriously, I was so pumped that there are no Braves part of that thing.
Yeah, and the Braves have the most players in the National League on the All-Star roster.
How about it?
Yeah.
So very exciting. All right. So, Kurt, let's get back to the action on the field this past week. So the team road trip is over, and the Braves ended up going 5-for-5. So I want to, start talking about this in terms of what we learned.
That doesn't look quite as good when they were 4-0.
Yeah, no, it's true. And look, I saw it a million times, and it's easy to go there of, if I had told you before the trip started that they were going to go 5-5, you'd be happy about it. But it's not apples to apples.
No.
The fact that they started 4-0, there was so much more in front of them. So what did we learn about the team during this 10-gamer? So I'm going to start. And, we learned that when you don't hit with runners in scoring position, it's hard to win games. So through those last two games in New York and then the four games in Milwaukee, the Braves with runners in scoring position went 1-for-8, 0-for-9. Those are the last two games in New York. Starting in Milwaukee, 3-for-9, 3-for-11. That was the one win. 0-for-3 in the first game in Milwaukee, then 3-for-9, then 3-for-11, and then 2-for-11. Now, the good news there is that kind of stuff isn't like, oh no, now the Braves can't hit with men in scoring position. I mean, that stuff can turn around on a dime. The bigger piece, of course, is that in the five losses that the Braves suffered this week, the starting pitchers' earned runs given up were Newcomb, 5 earned runs. Teherán, 5 earned runs. Freed, 4 earned runs. Folty, 5 earned runs. Newcomb, 5 earned runs. I mean, it is tough to win games like that.
And they all pitched about 2.5 innings in each one of those starts.
On the good side, I've been talking all season about the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Astros. I mean, everyone has. It's not my own pet theory. That the Red Sox and the Yankees and Astros are just on a completely different planet. I mean, their lineups, their rotations, the whole thing. But the good news is that the Braves did not look outclassed at all in the Yankees series, And had they gotten even just decent starting pitching those second game and the third game, things could go differently there.
Yeah, and it's a lot of sort of bloop fly balls to right that end up being 2-3-run homers that break the game open. And obviously the Braves did not do it on their end. But it's a lot of big guys that play for the Yankees who are just sort of flicking balls out to right field and they're three rows deep because it's such a short wall out there at 310 or something like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, it was those turned around a couple of games. Obviously, the big one was Teherán's pitch to Stanton that ended up being a 3-run homer. And Stanton was like 5-for-36 or something against Teherán in his career going into that at bat.
And it was an 0-2 count.
Yeah. I mean, you just can't throw that pitch there. It's letting him extend pitching away when the right field is so short there. It's criminal. And he might've they might've been trying to go inside on him and he just didn't get it there. But yeah, I mean, you get weird. The Nukem sweat game. And, you know, I mean, there was all sorts of stuff going on that you feel were like mitigating circumstances. And maybe if they had another opportunity, they would do a bunch of things differently. So they were there. I felt like the Brewers series was a little more, strange to say, was a little more lopsided. They did not look good at all in that Brewers series.
No, you're absolutely right. And for, you know, to have the, in the Sunday finale, the whole Inciarte getting benched because he wasn't, you know, running, and he wasn't hustling out of the box on that pop fly. I mean, it really couldn't have ended worse. You know, Newcomb's second bad start of the week, the Ender thing, Evan Phillips getting knocked around, you know, the runners in scoring position problems continuing. It was a rough way to end that trip.
Yeah, and there's some trends that are starting to pop up with the Braves. They're hitting a lot fewer home runs. That was the first series ever at Miller Park that they did not hit a home run. They the Brewers hit 7 to their 0, which you know, they were hitting 1.15 home runs per game through May, and that's since then they've averaged 0.916. So they are sort of falling off the planet in that regard. The two leaders on the team are Ozzy and Freddie, or the two only two guys who have more than 10 on the team are Ozzy and Freddie. Matt Adams, Big City, has 13 for Washington. So that production has fallen off, and obviously that comes with producing fewer runs and losing more games. So
yeah. I mean, look, we alluded to the starting pitching. I mean, it is in flux right now, Kurt. Fried goes on the DL with the blister after his start this past week. A couple days ago, Snitker said that Brandon McCarthy's knee tendonitis is still an issue. Tehran continues to be inconsistent, even within that Yankees game, within the course of the game. The two homers plus 10 strikeouts. Newcomb needs to get more consistent after those two straight poor outings, and really it's been more than that. There's no fifth starter right now. We've been beating the drum of gotta improve the bullpen, but I think the, you know, a equally important need is to bring in a inning eating, you know, consistent starter.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, the issue with Newcomb is a little concerning because it's sort of beyond just the last couple of starts. He started the season 7-1 with a 2.49 ERA. And the last six starts, he's 1-3 with a 5.58 ERA. So he's walking a lot more guys. He's given up a lot more homers. His two shortest outings, obviously, of the year were the past two starts that he had. And, you know, it was something I didn't really even think about until this show when I was thinking, you know, we were talking about starting pitching, is that he is getting to a threshold with innings that he has not really approached before.
Right. His minor league max was 140.
And last year he pitched 157 and two-thirds innings. He's basically at 100 right now. Right. And we're obviously at the All-Star break. So, I mean, you have to imagine that he is on an inning count, don't you think? I mean, do you think that – I mean, I don't know what
– that he's on an innings count or he's going to – get a couple of 10-day DL stints.
Yeah.
Right. You and I were texting today. I won't be shocked if Tuesday before the start of the Blue Jays series, he's announced that he's going on the 10-day DL.
And
just to get him a little rest and, you know, to stretch it over the All-Star break.
And I mean, where are you left? Anibal Sanchez is our ace right now. thank God the stopper, the only two road wins that we had in New York and Milwaukee both belong to Sanchez. Julio's up and down. You don't know from one start to the next what you're going to get from him. Obviously, Fulte is still great, but he's coming off a really bad start and has to pitch in the All-Star game. So, and you mentioned McCarthy is hurt. Newcomb, if Newcomb goes on the DL, I mean, where are you? I assume that and you tweeted about it. Gohara is getting geared up for a start.
I would hope. I mean, his last two appearances, the two innings in New York and the two innings in Milwaukee, he looked real good.
But what beyond that?
Right. Well,
Whistler.
Yeah.
Sims. I mean, those are the guys on the 40-man roster at Gwinnett. So, you know, beyond that, are you bringing up Colby Howard? Are you putting him on the 40-man and bringing him up? I just don't know where else you go. And you mentioned going out and getting somebody. I mean, I do not believe for the life of me that they're going to be in on somebody like DeGrom or Syndergaard, somebody like that. That just seems – and I don't want them going to get Cole Hamels. I just – you know, where are you going? Who is the guy that they're going to go out and get? I mean, there's a list of names that I'm looking at. Chris Archer, obviously still out there. Maybe his price tag has dropped dramatically. But it's Marco Estrada. It's Michael Fulmer. It's Jay Happ and Matt Harvey and Steven Matz and Ivan Nova and guys like that. I mean, yes, it would be an upgrade, obviously, over what you have. But, I mean, is it worth giving up pieces to go and get one of these guys?
I think it's that tier that the Braves will target, and I think that's going to happen. And I don't think you're giving up a ton.
Yeah,
I really don't. You know, that's the good news, right? I would be in favor of them going hard after DeGrom. I really would. Regardless of what it would cost and regardless of how painful it would be to watch those guys come up in your division and potentially, you know, come back and bite you. But you don't know what those guys are going to be, and you know exactly what DeGrom is.
An arm explosion waiting to happen.
Well, but, you know, sure. But more so Syndergaard. You know,
sure. Syndergaard
would really concern me. DeGrom doesn't concern me as much.
And your guy, Stroman.
Stroman. Yeah, you know, he's had a couple of good starts and a couple of bad starts over his last four. I mean, look, we've been saying since last year, when the Braves get the opportunity, they will probably trade Tehran. But if you trade Tehran, you've got to get someone like Archer or Happ or something. I mean, you can't go Fulte, Newcomb, Anibal, Gohara, Fried, Gohara, Allard. I mean, you can't go into the playoffs like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, and they're going to have to address, as great as all the young pitching prospects we have in our system, you can't continue to have two guys starting for you who are on innings counts or who are in their first year in the majors. I mean, you just can't rely on that. You know, I mean, you're almost going to have to do one guy at a time. And it's great that Fulte and Newcomb have been so productive. Hopefully Gohara, who's had experience up here, is the next guy that sort of settles in. But, you know, you're going to have to sort of do one, maybe two guys at the most, and you're going to have somebody that's an anchor in that starting rotation going forward the next couple of years, so you can address the issue by bringing up young guys and letting them pitch for the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that, obviously, depending on what moves they make at the deadline here, I believe they will address this in the offseason. There is so much talent in the minor leagues, and we talked about it last week, about that there's, you know, it's actually causing log jams and it's actually keeping some sort of natural progressions from happening through the, you know, through the minor league systems. I'm sure that they will address it in the off season. It'll be interesting to see if they can find someone controllable, someone we're not thinking about now, and sort of, you know, start that shoring up now.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at their top 30 prospects, I'm starting to do the math real quick in my head here, but it's at least 15, 16 of them are pitchers. Soroka, Wright, Gohara, Ian Anderson, Colby Howard, Fried, Joey Wentz, Toussaint, Kyle Muller, Bryce Wilson. I mean, on and on and on and on. And that's not even getting down to guys who you think, like our buddy Oscar Ñuñoa. You know, I mean, Yasiel De La Cruz, who's a guy I think they like a lot. I mean, there's a plethora of guys that they've just got waiting that they're going to have to do something with.
And this past week, Anderson and Wilson went nuts and were players of the week in their respective leagues.
Right.
You know, and of course, you know, the Braves' top 30 is better than almost everyone else's top 30.
Yeah.
They're top of the farm system.
Well, and that Florida team that you mentioned, I mean, it at one point had three of the top 12 prospects in the Braves system, Ian Anderson, Joey Wentz, and Bryce Wilson, as you mentioned, all playing for them. So, yeah. And that's what, low A? And Tucker Davidson, who's 21, and Ricardo Sanchez, who's 24.
Right.
My God.
Yeah, I think the fire frogs are high A. But yeah, no, it's crazy. It is crazy. So, you know, to sort of wrap things up on the 10 gamer, gotta have a good week this week. Be, you know, really be ashamed to stumble into the All-Star break, continuing this trend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the Braves are apt to have good turnaround weeks. Of course, this is the first four-game losing streak they've had all season long. But, yeah, they really need to go in. With a young team coming back home, all those things, you sort of really need to be righted in the good direction going into the All-Star break.
All right, Curtis, next up is Shot in the Dark, but first a quick break. All right, Shot in the Dark, our crazy predictions for the week that just ended. And we'll begin with our listener Shot in the Dark from Braves Marla, who predicted that through the seven games this past week, the Braves starters would give up 7 runs or less, the bullpen would give up 14 runs or more, and the Braves would take the Yankees series and split with Milwaukee.
Yeesh.
So none of that came to pass. The starters gave up 25 earned runs. The bullpen gave up 12 earned, and, you know, it was the bullpen had only given up 7 until the Sunday finale in Milwaukee, where they gave up 5. I mean, given all of those innings that the bullpen had to cover, not a bad week for the bullpen.
Right. Marla has been listening to too many of my shots in the dark. And
yeah, exactly. And of course, they neither won the New York series or split the Milwaukee one. So thanks, Marla. All right. Let's see how the three of us did. So Hammy predicted that the starters would give up 12 or fewer runs, and like we said, 25. Curtis, you predicted the bullpen would give up more than 20 runs. It was only 12.
I meant starters.
And I predicted that the Braves would take 2 of 3 of New York and hit more homers than the Yankees did. So, big no there. The Braves did not win the series, and the Yankees out-homered the Braves 7-6. So, all right, no winners to start the month of July. So we'll see what we have this week. Hammy has predicted that Vizcaino and Winkler will collectively pitch over 8 innings this week and give up 0 runs. Curtis, how about you?
Well, I know this is Monday. I know that the Phillies have a doubleheader today. They were tied last I looked with the Mets. I don't know what came of that game.
They're heading into extras.
Nice. And I don't know where the math plays out on all this. I didn't bother to figure that out from yesterday to today, but I say that the Braves will be 2.5-3 games, whatever the math works out from the Phillies by the All-Star break.
All right, where do you think the Nationals are going to be?
I think they will be tied with the Braves.
Oof. All right, as we're recording this, the Nationals are down 3-0.
Yeah, it's working already.
In the first inning.
Nice. Geo pitching.
All right, and I'm going that the Braves go 4-1 this week.
Nice.
And that Newcomb goes at least 6 and gives up no more than 1 earned run.
Even though you think he's going on the DL.
Right. If that prediction happens, my shot in the dark looks not as positive. All right. So, folks, remember, you get to play 2 each week. Don't forget to get your shot in the dark in before first pitch on Tuesday via Twitter before that Blue Jays game. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show, and you could win an Atlanta Baseball Talk koozie if you hit it exactly. All right, so Curtis, let's talk about this week ahead. 5 games, all at home, the final series before the All-Star break. 2 with the Blue Jays, 3 with the Diamondbacks. And let's take a look at the pitching matchup. So Julio starts things off and faces Marcus Stroman and his 6.5 ERA.
Trade for him.
Yeah. And then things get sort of hard to predict because the Braves have not announced the Wednesday starter. DOB on Sunday, when Gohara went in, he said, well, look, Allard started Saturday night for the Stripers, and Gohara's here on Sunday, so it's going to be faulty. But I don't know. I'm, you know, Gohara has to pitch a side session, right? He threw 28 pitches in that game on Sunday. Maybe it still is Gohara on Wednesday. I'm kind of holding out hope for that. But all of which to say, we don't really know what the order for the Braves pitchers are going to be, so I'm just going to continue on with the opponents. So game two in Toronto series, the Braves will face Sam Gavilio in his 381. On to the Diamondbacks series. First up will be Robbie Ray for the Diamondbacks and his 5.23 ERA. Next up, Zach Greinke and his 3.39. And then the finale will be Patrick Corbin, all-star Patrick Corbin, and his 3.05 ERA. So, Curtis, five games. You don't think the Braves are going to win much this week, I guess, with your shot in the dark. What do you think the record will be?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be terrible, and my math, I'm sure, is probably not right, given whatever would happen, but two
if and... only you had an extra day.
Yeah.
And two shots at this show.
That stupid job that I have. I'm going to go 2-3. 1-1, 1-2.
All right, and I'm going 4-1. And my goodness.
And Ham didn't bother, even with the extra day, to submit his predictions for the week ahead.
That's right. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access all of our shows and to post in our comment section. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit-